You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hi folks, be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Right now, here he is with all of his radiant glory, sitting out in his brand new... How come you always pull in the yard and your pickup is always so clean all the time?
I wash it on Mondays.
And it lasts through Tuesday.
At least through Tuesday, okay. Yes.
Dr. History, how are you?
I'm doing great, Zeb.
You have some people you want to thank this morning?
I do. I want to say hi to Jeanette in Red Deer, Alberta, Canada, a listener, and she grew up in a place called Swift Current, Saskatchewan.
Nice place.
And anyway, she kind of was telling me some of the names of some of the towns up there, which are really cool, I think. One called Moose Jaw, and yeah, some great names up in there.
Moose Jaw is better than Lockjaw.
That is. But, you know, I've had a couple of listeners from Canada that would like a story about Canada.
Really?
And so that's what we're going to do today.
I'm going to have you back the mic towards
just
me
a
just a little bit. We're popping the peas.
Okay,
that? There you go.
So we're going to go into north central British Columbia, which is kind of straight north of the state of Washington.
Yep.
So picture this. You got Canada, great green banks of timber, ripe for cutting. You got rivers with salmon, the mountains, the creeks, the food. The Indians had an amazing place with everything
they
needed.
Have you been there?
I've been up into Alberta.
Okay, you've been
into
Canada.
BC.
Oh, I'm telling you, there's parts up there that you just swear that St. Peter welcomed you to heaven.
Oh, beautiful.
They're
places.
Beautiful places, yeah. Up there.
So picture this. You got these half-starved English sailors whose ships ventured into the West Coast coves, and the Wonderland was something else. It was freedom for Billy Barker. Billy Barker was one of these guys.
Now, I suppose you want me to remember that name.
You're going to, because I'm going to repeat it. Billy Barker.
That was Bob Barker's brother from The Price is Right.
Something. Anyway, he was hungry for a new life. He jumped ship when he heard the news about gold along the Fraser and its tributaries. Billy was tough. He got to the diggings on a place called Williams Creek, and he set to work on his own, kind of his own way to make a fortune. Now, he was no geologist, didn't really know where to start digging, so he sank a shaft some distance from the stream. It wasn't right on the stream, but pretty close to it. And prompted by some inner light to explore the possibilities of maybe a prehistoric stream bed that might be underneath where he was digging. So Billy actually had six partners, and these guys were all Englishmen, and most of them had jumped ship. So here we are, August 13th, 1862. The hole reached 35 feet.
Down.
Now, that's a lot of digging in gravel, dirt, rocks, 35 feet down.
You know, that's a long way.
And it's hard.
One man did that?
No, there were six. Oh. Billy and his six partners.
Okay.
Now, a few of the superstitious ones wanted to quit because it was the 13th, a bad day, their funds had run out. Lucky for them.
What was the indication that there might be gold in that area when you start digging a hole 35 feet down?
He had no idea. It was just like, well, this is as good as any. Let's start digging.
Holy cow.
So, anyway, some of them, they were down on their money. And there was a guy by the name of Judge Begbie of Richfield that staked them out for a few more days. So they keep going down. Now they're at 50 feet down. The men struck an old river channel. A shovel full of gravel was sent up and panned in the creek. It yielded $5. So they took this gravel up, panned it. $5.
A 50-foot hole for $5?
Well, hang on. Okay. Now, struggling to control, they were excited. They were elated. The men at the bottom filled the hoist bucket to the brim. This panned out $1,000.
Oh.
One bucket, Zeb.
Oh. Now I'm getting interested.
Okay, now, in the panic that followed, everybody came to a stop except the men's feet, which were dancing around. They were headed for the neighboring town of Richfield and its saloon.
Saloon. Now, I'm not familiar with that name. What does that mean?
You just hang on. You'll get it. I think you'll catch on. Now, winter began to set in soon after the big discovery, and winter in this place, the Caribou, was 40 below with deep snow.
Ew.
The first buildings were of logs, later of whipsawn lumber. All of the Barkerville, now they're calling this place Barkerville, after Billy Barker.
Yeah.
They were strung along one single street. Buildings were elevated a few feet, as were the sidewalks above, because miners would frequently dam the creek for a time in their searching for gravel, and the Williams Creek would head right down the center street of Barkerville. So it was a little muddy, kind of a, there were hazards, other hazards in the street. The oxen and other beasts of burden were not too sanitary. Garbage was left everywhere, and the mud was knee-deep. So you got a kind of a picture. This wasn't a real pleasant place to be.
Their Chamber of Commerce had a hard time selling that place.
They did. Now, Billy Barker could take no real pride in all this growth. He was a worried man. Okay, the January after his strike, he decided he could afford to get married. Since gold was pouring in from the shaft, I mean, he was just getting wealthy. Okay, now on another 13th, which was maybe he shouldn't have, Friday the 13th, he married a widow in Victoria and brought her to the camp. Now, it's presumed that the new Mrs. Barker had heard more than rumors of her husband's wealth.
Uh-huh.
And his looks had not been what had attracted her.
So you're telling me she was a gold digger?
Yes, indeed, but not really. So here he is, Billy Barker. He's 42 years old, and he's described as being wide and stubby, bow-legged and bearded. Billy found it increasingly necessary to spend huge sums of money on his bride to keep her attention, so to speak.
I see. So to speak.
So to
You're
speak.
You're doing this so nice.
Thank you.
So
and that's
nice.
All I'm going to say about that.
I figured that.
Okay. Now, his company soon took in some $600,000 from the hole in the creek bed.
Now,
from that 50
what year
foot,
was that?
1862.
And today, that would be holy.
At least 10 times.
Moly.
Yeah. Anyway, he went through it quickly. If you can imagine, he spent, and pretty soon became evident that his resources had struck bottom. His wife left the camp. He was abandoned. He was lonely. Billy soon spent what little was left, and when the mine failed, he made a living cooking for road crews, took to drinking, cost him one job after another. He wound up in an old man's home in Victoria, dying of cancer in 1894. So, 30 years later?
So, 30 years later, the guy went from one of the wealthiest men to nothing.
Yeah. Now, meanwhile, the town, Barkerville, was mushrooming, you know, in the beginning with new discoveries. There was a what's called the Grizzly Mine. It had a weekly payroll of $10,000. Another mine called the Caledonian at the edge of town brought in more than $5,000 a day.
Today.
For
wow.
a time.
Holy
now, Barkerville actually burned to the ground in 1868 because, just imagine, you've got all these flimsy shacks that are dry wood and a few sparks, and anyway, it was it went up.
Well, what happened to Mrs. Barker?
I think she went back to San Francisco or
I see.
Wherever. Okay. Anyway, she might have been out digging some more gold somewhere. Now, there was plenty of gold in Barkerville, the terrible road conditions in winter often kept food out and near famine during the wintertime. And, in fact, there's a quote from the newspaper says, quote, "There is not a pound of beef or mutton to be procured at any of the butchering establishments on the creek." And it says, in the paper, it says, even beans and bacon were not always available, and sometimes neither were such staples as candles. And so the paper goes on to say, quote, "In consequence of the scarcity of candles, we notice several persons are availing themselves of a large quantity of beef tallow accumulated by them during the winter and are now busy converting it into candles, which they readily sell at $1 per pound."
Really?
So amazing. But
wow.
Now,
what did they eat?
I guess, I don't know. Whatever they could find. They might have been boiling a leather boot or something.
Oh, my goodness.
But you know, the first pack trains in spring also brought news. And in 1866, the newspaper quoted this. A train of 20 pack animals, being the first arrival for the season, got in yesterday morning, brought in a load of potatoes, which are being sold for 15 cents a pound.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team, led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Whoa.
That's what, $15 a hundred?
Oh, my goodness sakes.
Yeah, that's probably better than it is today.
Yeah.
So, anyway, remarkable and somewhat unique in the mining camp was the almost total absence of violence.
They're too hungry.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't have shootings. They didn't have lynchings. And in Barkerville, they didn't have any of this. And in spite of a population made up of young guys, mostly single miners from every walk of life, several countries, and this is probably not due to the great brotherly love they had for each other, but because getting in and out of town was so hard, it was a task in summer, and a quick getaway in winter was not possible. So a man might think twice before he pulled out a gun.
So they were basically snowed in the winter.
Yeah, you didn't go hardly in or out.
Oh, my.
Now, there was some friction between the numerous Americans there and the British people. There was a little bit of a conflict.
Like 1776. Yeah.
And it was usually due to the desire of the Americans to have the biggest and the best of everything.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so here's a little incident. It's called the flagpole incident.
Oh, my.
Okay. There was a saloon called Martin's, and it was an American-owned saloon, and it boasted it had the tallest flagpole in town. So, 4th of July comes around, and the day before, a few of the Canadians went into the woods and found a tree that would make a taller flagpole than the Martins. They cut it down. They waited for darkness. They dug a 10-foot hole. They erected the pole and rigged it up with pulley and rope. Daylight revealed the new Canadian flag flying several feet higher than the American one.
And then what happened?
Nothing.
It
was just a good, good-natured good time.
High-spirited.
Yeah. So, anyway, it was a time when people favored every new patent medicine that came along. Now, there was a guy by the name, his name was Wellington Moses. And he was a Barkerville's barber, and he was a kind of a contributor to these patent medicines. So, in fact, he had something in 1866. There was a notice in the paper, and it said, quote, Moses' hair invigorator to prevent baldness, restore hair that has fallen out or become thin, and to cure effectively scurf, which I don't know what that is, or dandruff.
Sure it wasn't scurry?
I don't know. It will also relieve headaches and give the hair a darker and glossy color, and the free use of it will keep both hair and skin in a healthy state.
Maybe you and I should get some.
Well, we're getting that way. It goes on. It says, when used on children's heads, it lays the foundations for a good head of hair.
There you go.
Now, Mr. Moses promised a lot of stuff, and this is a letter that he got in 1860. It says, in the years 1860 and 61, this is from one of his customers, okay? In the years 1860 and 61, from long and severe illness, my hair became very weak and was falling out in a most fearful manner. I was in dread of becoming entirely bald. After a few applications by you, and after using 3 bottles of the invigorator, my hair was restored and is becoming thick and strong as it ever was before.
Really?
I'm not sure where the letter came from. So, anyway...
That was in 1860-something.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Anyway, Moses, he was pretty brave, and he ventured to install Barkerville's first bathtub. And it was placed in the back room of his shaving salon. The very first bathtub. And that's all we're going to say about that.
How would you like to line up for a bath?
I'd want to be first.
Yeah, I was going to say, they didn't hardly change the water.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
So anyway, the day came when it was evident that the gold in Williams Creek was not going to last forever, and the hopes for some fantastic lode in quartz outcroppings became more and more remote. In 1866, a claim in the area could not be purchased at any price. When it first started, you couldn't buy land or a claim hardly for any amount of money. But as things got bad, it said, for sale, well-built house, pleasantly situated at the head of the creek, businesses started to fail. Nobody was buying anything anymore. You could buy a house for next to nothing, but again, the it was being played out, and it was pretty much gone.
So the gold rush was over.
Indeed, yeah, it was indeed a rush that ended, and which happened in lots and lots of them.
Yeah.
You know. So anyway, Bartersville was losing its people. Now, in the late years, the province of British Columbia became aware of the historical importance of the old camp and began a program of restoration, and this has been carried on with great attention to detail. In August of 1962, 100 years from the day that Billy Barker made his big strike on Williams Creek, the centennial celebration was held in the old town in a fine museum that was dedicated, marking the official opening of Barkerville Historic Park. So if you go there today, it's a ghost town, so to speak.
But it's still there.
Well, yeah, it's there. So it's kind of a ghost town, but I looked at some pictures. It looks like a beautiful place. And so this is 1962 is when they dedicated this as a an official historic park. So, you know.
Do you have a picture of it?
I do not with me.
I
looked online, though, and saw, and it looks like a beautiful place to
go
visit.
In my mind's eye, I've got a picture of like a little valley with the mountains, high mountains surrounding it. Is that basic?
Yeah, it is. It's a beautiful place. And, if I ever get that far up into Canada, I'd love to go visit somebody.
Yeah, really?
And I've actually got in this book, as you see here, this Ghost Towns of the Old West. There's another one in Canada that but we don't quite have. Well, I don't know.
We got about five minutes.
Okay. Well, let's go through this one real quick.
Okay,
all
real
right?
fast.
Okay, Ashcraft Manor in British Columbia. There were some brothers, the Cornwall brothers, Henry Allen, Clement Francis. They established this Ashcraft Manor, and they brought in, being good Englishmen, they brought in some country sports. They brought in some fine Arab stallions, 20 foxhounds, and in early 1862, the brothers brought in some cattle from Oregon, and they brought in some cowboys, and they wanted to have a fox hunt. But they didn't have any foxes up there, Zeb.
Oh.
So they replaced them with coyotes.
Uh-huh. Okay? Tally-ho, the coyote!
Well, now, wait a minute, Zeb. You're getting ahead of me.
Oh.
So, now picture this. You got the American cowboy sitting on a row on a rail fence, and they're instructing all the proper terms. And the first man sighting the coyote is supposed to call out, "Where away?"
Where away?
Now, when the direction taken by the fox or the coyote was determined, the spotter was to cry, "Yoicks."
Yoicks?
Yoicks.
Where away? Yoicks!
And as a signal to get ready, then all the riders would take off at the shout, "Tally-ho!"
Aha!
And they would take off, and when the cowboy finally found one, all that kind of went by the way, and the cowboy said, "There he goes!"
Yeah, but the cowboy always used to say, "Go get that little..."
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, it was kind of an interesting deal, these Cornwall brothers kept diaries, and...
What does yoicks mean?
I don't know.
You're the historian. That's your assignment for next week. Give us the explanation of yoicks.
Anyway, Ashcraft Manor developed into a kind of a way, a place for people to stop between gold fields, between the different areas.
Yeah, and
I believe it is actually still in... I think the manor is still building up there in the little town of Ashcraft.
I'll be darned.
So
tally-ho!
Tally-ho and yoits.
And go get the...
And where away. And go get the darn thing. Yep.
Oh, you cleaned that up.
I did.
So our friends to the North Country, they had great big gold rushes too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I appreciate the last two people from Canada that have asked about stories up there. So I'm going to try to find more stories that took place.
Every one of your gold rush stories always ends in the same kind of a vein to where it played out,
right.
And everybody went broke.
Well, I think what happened is a lot of them, after they did make money, I think they probably left.
You know,
before they, I think they could see that it was not going to be very profitable, and they would hear about something else somewhere else, and bam, they were gone.
I'm still concerned about Billy Barker's wife.
Well, you know, I think she made out okay.
Yeah, she came out with a lot of money.
Billy didn't.
But I think she
did all right.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
Mrs. Billy Barker.
Well, you know, there you go. You've done it again. And all those folks. Oh, by the way, audience, if you're listening to Dr. History and you want to call your friends and neighbors anywhere in the world and tell them ZebBell.com. ZebBell.com. And that'll put you live so you can listen to it live every Tuesday. Gotcha.
And if they want to, if they don't catch us on your time, they can go to my dr-history.com webpage, and 330 stories on there right now.
And how many hits did you say we've had?
This year, so far, there's been about 180,000 downloads.
That just blows my mind.
Mine, too.
Yeah.
I can't imagine, but...
That's why your hair is all frizzy. It blew your mind.
No, it's just gray.
Okay. Dr. History. What are we going to talk about next week?
I don't know. I'm going to look through this book, this Ghost Towns of the Old West, and see what else I can find.
You know, one of the topics, a gentleman called me last week on Friday, and he said, you know, why don't you have Dr. History talk about some of the old guns in the Old West?
And the
44, the Colt 45, and all that type of thing.
And I've been watching some documentaries on guns of the Old West, and pretty fascinating with Colt and Browning and all those guys.
And the Winchester 73 and all that.
Yeah.
Got to run. Dr. History, God bless you, man. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right.